I wonder how many of you listening this morning can remember when Near FM actually took to the airwaves 25 years ago. Well, one person who can remember it was Margaret Tumulty, and she was the original, the first manager here at Near FM. And my colleague Kieran Murphy interviewed Margaret, and he first asked her what it was like back in 1995. God, doesn't it sound so long ago now? And it's really only yesterday. And if she could remember her first few weeks in the place.
I can just barely. I can't believe it's this amount of time. And yet when I look back, it does feel like you're reaching back into the, you know, really from memories from long ago. I was 23. It was my first full-time job. When I look back now, I realise how clueless and naive and young I was. And yet, looking back, I realise that they were strengths in that I went into this job and I hadn't a sense of how much I didn't know. I hadn't a sense of what barriers, you know, I should have seen or difficulties I should have seen. Sure, I didn't. I had no clue, really, the more I think of it. So it was my first full-time job. I remember arriving in. You had a real sense of the place. You were kind of coming in halfway through a story or a third of a way through a story. So you had a sense that you were arriving in, but that there was this group of people who sweat, blood and tears had been expended to get this license, and there was this whole story that you used to hear over tea and coffee and cigarette breaks, and you'd hear people talking about things that had happened in the past, and especially about Jack and the efforts that he and the group had put in to get this license. So you were joining into something that had come a long way already. It was this hive of ambition. It was like a ball of excitement and potential, and there was this real sense of everyone wanting to do well. And you were coming in, you know, and really it kind of appeals when you're 23 and you think you can change the world. You were suddenly around adults who also thought they could change the world, even though they were 10, 20, 30 years older than you, and they wanted to make a difference. And it was really, you know, that was a wonderful thing to walk into at that age in your life. You know, if you think of other jobs where you go in at 23 and you're being kind of having the idealism knocked out of you, whereas this was a job you went into and the idealism was fanned and it was encouraged. So, yeah, it was great and the people were great. And I mean, I was 23. I think I was one of the youngest in the station. Everybody else was older. Like, when I look back now, like, you were kind of going in this position of not authority, but you were kind of, you were the station supervisor and people were coming to you and expecting you to have answers for stuff. But people were great. I never once ever got a sense that, what would you know, you young slip of a girl, sure, you're wet behind the ears, you haven't a clue. I never got that. And, you know, when I hear other people now talk about their first jobs or hear young women talk about, you know, going into jobs and, you know, not having confidence or having their confidence undermined, that never happened. You were treated as an equal. There was no sense of, you're young, you don't know what you're doing. There was no sense of, don't you be telling me about anything. It was really, really a great environment. And I really hope my own kids have an opportunity to have a first job, because I think it stood to me. And also having to manage people. Sure, I'd never managed people or managed a staff, and we had great people on the CE scheme, and it was just exciting. And the people became your friends, and actually two or three of the people I worked with are still in my tight, close circle of friends now. It was great socialising, and it was great excitement, and the programmes were exciting. I mean, there was a whole education I had to go through. I mean, you went in, I had done communications, and you thought you knew what good radio was, and then you kind of had to have an aha moment when you realise we're not trying to be a small RTE, we're not trying to be a small FM 104, and actually if we start to sound like those, we failed. We're about a different thing. We're not about having these polished people with accents from the middle of the Atlantic. We're actually about having programmes that give the local community a voice and allow people to tell their stories, and that was something I had to learn.
So it was a place of great excitement and ambition. But what was it like, actually? I mean, what was your office like? What was your what was your computer like and stuff?
The computer would have been a clunky old desktop. But, I mean, it was great for the time. Sure, I'd never had an office. The office was just one big room. We were all thrown into it. There was desks. I mean, when I think back now, there was a permanent cloud of smoke. When I think of that now, I mean, God, how times have changed. Sure, there was about, what was there, 11 on the scheme at one point, 11 or 13 on the scheme, and I smoked at the time. I only smoked for 6 years of my life. But
was smoking obligatory at that stage in Near FM?
Well, I wouldn't have said it was obligatory, but there was a lot of it. Yeah. And a lot of the volunteers would come in, and sure, you barely had to buy a packet of cigarettes. Now, I remember Tony Flood and Robert O'Toole kept me in. I remember their cigarettes used to take the throat off me, but you wouldn't refuse. Like, it was just a thing that people did, and it feels so strange now, but there was great chats over the cigarettes and during breaks in the program, and the one set of volunteers coming in to go on, you know, their program coming up. And so the desk, yeah, and I remember I used to go barefoot. I remember the summer was good that year, and I remember I'd be barefoot in the room. Because I remember I didn't even notice I was doing that until one or two of the staff used to say it to me. But I know it was just great crack. You were sitting on top of each other, and it was, you know, so you were chatting about programmes, and you knew everything that was going on, and all the everyone working there during the day knew what everybody else was working on, and it was just great. But like, I was, when I think back now, how naive I was at times. Like, I remember I didn't see barriers because I wasn't copped on enough to see that they might be there. I remember we talked about getting the schools programme going, and I just took it into my head, you know what I'll do, I'll write to all the principals and all the schools in the area and just invite them in. Never really occurred to me to say, Jesus, I should probably check this with the board first, or I should check with Jack, or I should, you know, I should, there was probably, I didn't even realise that there might be a formality around something like that, or nothing like that. Got them all in, and, you know, it came full circle in that, my eldest is 13, and she would have been going to school in Girls' School Columbkill there in Coolock Lane, and she came home one day and she said, I'm going on the radio. And I said, what do you mean you're going on the radio? She said, oh, I'm going on Near FM. And I thought, my God, full circle. And so she went back and she did some inserts on some of the programmes, and some from her class did as well. And, you know, I drove her down that day. Now, I wouldn't have known any of the people that were there at the time, but it just felt, wow, you know, little did I know then, as a 23-year-old, that my own daughter would be coming back and, you know, doing some radio on the show and or on their station.
Yeah,
and she came out of it, you know, walking a foot taller. And I think that's something about radio as well. It was great to see people, and I know I was only there for a year, but I learned an awful lot when I was there. It was great to see people, you know, who would never have thought that they would ever be behind the mic, or that they'd have any involvement in the media. You know, that was for other people. And then they were the people who ended up putting together programmes and ringing people and getting interviews. And a lot of them then graduated to going behind the microphone. And if you'd said it to them, even 10 years previous or 5 years previous, they would have said, go away. But it was just seeing the confidence as well that it can give to people to be able to realise my voice is valid, and I have something to say, and I have a story to tell, and our stories are as important as the stories that RT are pumping out, the stories that, you know, the slick sounding shows are pumping out. And that was just, it was great. I had no experience of community development. It gave me an understanding of community development that I brought to all my subsequent jobs, and the realisation that, you know, how you do something is as important as the outcome that you get. And if you do it in a way that's participatory, that brings people in, that involves people, that's far more powerful than just assuming you know everything and going to doing it for people. And when I left Near FM, I went to Galway down working in UCG on teaching radio to women, actually, to get more women involved. But I would have also then I would have worked with the Galway Traveller Support Group, I would have learned facilitation skills. All of that interest was whetted in Near FM. I wouldn't have had that experience otherwise.
And what about on the social side? Was there an active social life back at that stage?
There was. Oh, God, there was. I mean, the amount of evenings that we'd find ourselves down the sheaf of wheat and just, oh, it was great crack. And there was. And you were mixing as well with all different age groups. You know, you were mixing. You were having the crack with someone in their 60s and someone in their 30s. And it was just great. But there was a buzz. There definitely was a buzz. And people were excited. And people felt that, you know, the schedule started to grow, the type of program started to grow, more groups became involved, and there was this sense of this is going somewhere and we're doing what we set out to do. And as I said, I was a newbie, but you had the sense that these people had had this ambition for so long and had such a clear vision for what it could deliver, and now it was starting to deliver. So it was just, yeah, it was great. Really was great.
And you did, of course, work very hard at that initial year too. I mean, did you put in a lot of hours, and was it stressful at times?
It didn't feel like hours, because when the social life and the work life started to meld, and like, you weren't going in counting widgets, you were going in every day, and every day was different, and the programmes were different, and, you know, different things had come up. So it didn't, a lot of the time it didn't feel like work here. A lot of the time it was just, that was life. Life was, sure, what else did I have going on? I was a single young one at 23. You know, I had freedom to socialise, freedom to put as many hours in as I wanted. And, you know, invariably, you know, if you were out in the evening, you were talking about work as well and about stories and about funny things that had happened and talking about programmes. And so it didn't really feel like work, which I think is the sign of, you know, a great job, really. It didn't, no, the stress. Look, I don't remember the stress. I'm God, I'm sure there was. Yeah, and it could be something as simple as someone hadn't left the keys out for someone to get the studio open on a particular night. And also, obviously, you're working in a place where there's a strict schedule, you know, so is the presenter going to turn up? Is there a presenter late? Is that programme going to run over? What should we do? But I don't know that was stress. That was kind of more just pressure. And it was a great training ground in just having to make decisions and take responsibility for the decisions. But you always had people around you. So I don't remember it as stressful. I'm sure if I could talk to my 23-year-old self, they'd say, what are you on about? But right now, looking back, I don't remember it as stress. I remember it as excitement and potential and autonomy and the creativity and the ability to come up with ideas and realise that they'd be discussed. There was no one going to say, go away, what would you know? You know, you had a real opportunity to input and to say what you thought might work or what mightn't work. And yeah, it was really good. So a bit of maybe it's rose-coloured glasses looking back, but my gut memories are all positive.
What would you say are your best memories and who do you remember from those times?
Who do I remember? Well, obviously, I remember like Jack was a huge influence, Jack Byrne. I remember Brendan and Vincent. Tony and Robert, I remember. I can't remember was their programme on, was it a Saturday or a Sunday, but I remember the chats with them. And I remember learning about music from people as well. These people had encyclopedic knowledge of music, people I'd never heard of, and they'd be telling you about it. I love Nina Simone, and I can't remember the name of the man now. Sometimes I remember, forget my own kids' names, never mind, but the gentleman who used to come in with glasses on, was it a Friday afternoon? And I remember he played Nina Simone. I had never heard this woman singing before. And I remember thinking, God, I love that. And 2 or 3 weeks later, a CD was left on my desk. And I still have that CD. And he gave me that. Do you know what I mean? So there was little personal things with that. And you thought, God, I would never have known about that woman singing if it wasn't for that man. And it's given me such joy over the last few decades. So I remember Dave O'Connor, the laugh of Dave. I remember Sinead Spain, who's now head of news, is it in Today FM? Andrew Phelan, who would have been on the scheme, still one of my best friends. Declan McLaughlin, who I subsequently worked with in the Broadcast Authority, and still one of my close friends. And I remember a whole host of faces. I'm not great with names, but I remember a whole host of faces. But we had great laughs. We really did have great laughs.
And
Tony Flood's son as well, Tony Jr. I remember having loads of laughs with him as well.
And after you left, there was a huge legacy of what you had brought to it and who you were, and it took many years for me to find my own space and be myself, because they were huge shoes to fill.
No, I think you're being kind there, but look, it that was the great thing about that place. It was never about one person. You know, Jack was very obviously a visionary and had set a vision for people, but it was never really about one person. You know, that was the great thing about it. You weren't going to come out of there fully yourself. You know, you came out knowing you were part of a group of people who were trying to achieve something.
And when you listen to radio today, do you still think of those times in Near FM?
I do. I think of one of the things that struck with me, and I didn't fully understand at the time, and then as I went to the next job, I started to understand it, was Jack talking about media literacy. And even if you look at the whole, you know, we've just come through an American election and all the coverage of it, but that really stuck home with me, the idea that people need, it's as important to be able to read the media as it is to be able to read a book or a piece of paper or, you know, the newspaper. And that you need to bring that critical eye. And even I see it with my own kids when they'll come and say, but the internet said it, and you're going, yeah. But that idea of media literacy stuck with me, that people need to be discerning about what they're listening to and be able to ask themselves, well, now who's benefiting from this viewpoint, or why would they be saying that, and what might be the contrary view? And I think that's where community radio, if you look in America at the moment and you have such partisan media, you have your Fox News, you have your CNNs, and both sides have become so polarised that if you're a middle-of-the-road person, you're going, well, where do I listen? And unfortunately, people just listen to the one that agrees with them. So then you just further believe what it is you believe, and nobody puts a contrary view to you that makes you stop and think. And I think that's where the likes of community radio, National Public Radio in America, but community radio here as well, is so important, that you're hearing other viewpoints and you're hearing it from your community's perspective. And it's not, I think of that often, actually. I'm as convinced now, I'm more convinced, obviously, because I know more about the world, but I'm as convinced now of the importance of community radio as I was in the heady, idealistic days of when I started.
That's fantastic, Margaret. It's lovely to talk to you. And if you do have any photographs from those times, you must send them on to us.
I will do. And listen, congratulations on the 25 years. It's some achievement. And the very best of luck.
And I'll pass on your regards to lots of people who still remember you.
Please do.
Okay, Gurmila Margaret.
Gurmad, Kieran,
Slán. Slán, lad.